You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Play with Ben and Colton. I'm your host, Ben Kerr, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Colton Prale. Colton, how's it going tonight?
I'm great. Did you forget I was your co-host there? Or?
No, I was opening up the app we use to record our calls.
Right.
So I was just looking for that app and opening that up, making sure that we were getting recorded.
You just missed Dave. I understand. All right. Heralding back to the old days.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we have you tonight, though, because the biggest news in the NHL is happening in the city with the third worst team in the NHL.
Hey, not for long. Arizona's winning. Buffalo's tied. Detroit's winning. We could be the worst team in the NHL if we really tried.
Well,
yeah.
Hopefully the Habs will lose tonight and that'll help them move down. But anyways, in Ottawa, we had Pierre Dorion go on the radio and indicates that they've thought about trading Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for the Senators and for Sens fans?
Look, it's the way he phrased it for me that makes this seem like it's kind of been blown up bigger than it should be. And I understand why. I mean, it's Erik Karlsson, and for every media outlet out there, that's views. But I don't see this trade happening. This is, in my opinion, just a general manager doing his job and saying, we're going to listen to offers on everybody. There's no untouchable, as there shouldn't be in this business. That said, you know, if he's going out there and saying, well, we're listening to offers on Erik Karlsson and all it's going to take is, you know, an elite player, a prospect, and a pick, then I've got some serious questions about why he has his job. I think this is just, you know, we're listening to offers on everybody. We're looking to change the team up to get better. We're listening to offers on everybody. It's not unfathomable that he could be traded because, hey, even Gretzky got traded. I think that was what that message was supposed to be. I don't think we're about to see Erik Karlsson get dealt. I think he's going to re-sign in Ottawa, and I think he's going to have a fairly prosperous career there. That would be my expectations. I think part of the reason that was put out there is to say, you know, is to try and minimize the fact that they're looking at dealing at Mike Hoffman. And I think that was sort of the game plan, you know, to say like, look, yeah, I know we're putting a 30 goal scorer on the block or a near 30 goal scorer on the block, but you know, we're looking at everybody when the truth of the matter is, no, they're trading Mike Hoffman away because Eugene Melnyk wants to cut cash. And I think that's what he tried. And I think it blew up in his face, justifiably so, especially after the messaging that's come out of the team in the last month. But I don't think it's as big a deal as it's been made out to be.
All right. Well, I'm just going to remind you of something that another general manager said on June 23rd, 2016 at the NHL draft in Buffalo, New York, which was that I'm not even listening to offers. I'm just taking calls. When a GM calls me, I don't know who he's calling about, so I answer the phone. Yes, I've received calls on PK, but I'm not shopping PK Subban. I can tell you that. As if he had made Subban, Bergevin would go on to say, of course, you never say never. If someone offered me half their team, well, you've got to make it work. But it's not my intention to trade PK Subban.
I would say, you know, what we've got going for us is a smart GM, but Pierre Dorion is behind the wheel. So at this point, I believe it.
Okay, because those are the exact words of Mark Bergevin 4 days before he traded PK Subban.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to happen. I want to clarify that. Karlsson is not getting traded, and definitely not for a Shea Weber type. They couldn't afford that contract.
Okay. No, I don't. I would do Karlsson for Weber trade. I think that would
I think fair. Everybody in the world would do Karlsson for Weber except for Sens fans.
Yeah.
That'd be ridiculous.
I think that'd be a fair trade, but
okay.
But no, I mean, from here, from a non-Sens fan perspective, I just get the feeling that where there's smoke, there's fire, and that this isn't getting shut down with a no, don't be ridiculous. We're not trading Erik Karlsson. You know, the Oilers aren't going to give us Connor McDavid, so we're not trading Erik Karlsson. Those would be the type of comments that I would expect here. It'd be like, come on, he's easily a top five player in the NHL. Nobody else is moving their top five player in the NHL, so I'm not moving mine.
You bring up an interesting point, though. Peter Chiarelli and Pierre Dorion could get this done. If Hull and CeCe was close, Karlsson for McDavid is believable.
All right. I can see that one. But yeah, that's just kind of the answer I would expect. And we just, we know that Karlsson needs a contract. We know that Melnyk has some issues. And there are some financial things going on. Now, those may resolve themselves shortly. We are expecting an announcement in the next 48 hours, probably 24 hours when this podcast is up. It was sometime on Thursday, in any event, about LeBreton Flats deal and the Ottawa Senators getting some land to build a new arena. Where does that go? Does Melnyk have the financing to put an arena together? That's an issue that Sean or Scott Simpson at TSN in Ottawa, their radio station, I think it's TSN 1200, is it?
Yep.
TSN 1200 in Ottawa, that he was saying this is going to be a moment of truth for Melnyk as to how liquid he is and how much financing he can get in terms of making a deal for a new hockey arena.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things to keep in mind here. One is that Melnyk is not alone in this. It's a $3 billion proposal that they've put forward. And if this announcement that comes out on Thursday, it's supposed to come out around 11:30 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time is when the National Capital Commission is having their in-camera meeting. But if it's announced, which is what people think they'll announce, is basically that, like, yeah, we're giving them 6 to 12 months to find the finances here. Melnyk is going to have to come up with $3 billion cash. Now, he does have a partner. That's John Rudy of Trinity Developments, and they've got a group called Rendezvous LeBreton. That's where I think the liquidity is going to come from, because Melnyk has shown that he doesn't have the liquid finances available. You know, this is not something that Eugene Melnyk could do alone. And with the way the team's been looking, I have some serious doubts about his ability to get those finances from a standard bank, because the team has run into problems during or following those routes, I should say, in the past. So I'm really relying here on John Rudy. That said, they've had the preferred bid status since 2016. You know, it was always the goal to have the Senators there downtown and really revitalizing the core. I think what's interesting is the timing of this coming out. Just about 10 days ago, the Ottawa mayor, Jim Watson, came out and said, hey, you know, it's not on Ottawa to finance the Senators. You know, we're not going to pay for a public stadium. And there was some real concerns about this LeBreton Flats deal, and the other group involved came out and said, you know, hey, you know, we're still around. We can invest in LeBreton Flats. Don't forget about us, guys. And there was some serious concerns around Ottawa Senators fans, around the city. You fast forward 11 days, and it seems like things are moving ahead. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I still think this is something at least 5 years out, you know, 2022-23 time frame. But it's certainly interesting. And I mean, you got Bruce Garriott and John Shannon reporting it, and it's on the docket. You know, it's on the National Capital Commission's docket for Thursday. So this should be a fairly big announcement.
Yeah, no, I think we are definitely getting a big announcement. There's enough people out there who are credible who are reporting it. I know you just said Bruce Garriott, but John Shannon doesn't seem to traffic in too many rumors. Garriott on the business end of things.
He's solid on that.
Yeah, he's solid in knowing what's going on in the business end, and that, I mean, his rumors on trades and stuff can sometimes be called into question, but on the rumor side, on the business side, he seems to know what's going on in Ottawa. And so I think that's where the Senators are going to be. It's a matter of time before they get there. As you said, you know, construction on this building is probably going to take at least a full calendar year, if not longer. And that's once they get the financing and the shovels in the ground. So you're probably looking at maybe a year and a half once it's being built, a year to a year and a half, and then getting them in the building and all those things. So you're looking at a good deal of time away, but it does look like the Senators will have some sort of new home. What I would say, though, and I think the Senators will have a new home, because I think if this deal falls apart, then there will be a number of cities, not the least of which is Quebec City, looking to pick up the pieces.
That's fair. I think Seattle has a better chance than Quebec, especially just with the announcements that have been coming out of there. It seems like they're gunning for a team, and they're going to get one sooner rather than later. But it's hard to think the Sens won't move if things stay the way they are.
I think the Sens, the way I read Seattle is team number 32.
That's fair. And Sens just moving.
And where I read Quebec City and Houston are in case of emergency and a team needs to move, break this glass.
I have such a hard time buying Houston as a hockey hotbed almost. You know, I just don't see it. I can see it from a U.S. capital, and we've got investors there, but I just don't know what the support is going to be like. It took the Stars a long while to become what they are in Dallas. And they're still, you know, the third team there. So fourth team, I guess. They have baseball too.
Yeah, if you count the Texas Rangers in Arlington.
Yeah.
You'd definitely be the fourth team. But I think the fourth team, I think, isn't Houston like the number four city in the United States?
Yeah. Yeah, it's ginormous.
That's kind of where I think being the number four team in the fourth biggest city, the NHL would be fine with, based on size.
I look at the Islanders, though, and the struggles they've had in Brooklyn. I mean, it's not like just because you're in a big city, you can't fail.
No, absolutely. And that brings us to our next topic, which definitely is the Islanders in Brooklyn. It sounds like they have some announcements to make. We know they've got a new arena on the way. We've talked about that, but that's two years away, likely. So they've got to find a place to play for the next two seasons. There's a lot of talk about a January 30th date for getting out of their lease at the Barclays Center. And so there's been some reports today out of some reliable Islander sources that they are looking at playing some games, maybe not a full season, but some of their games next season at the old Nassau County Coliseum, their former home, which has been renovated extensively since they left.
I love it. It's a mess for Islanders fans, don't get me wrong, but I'm excited to see them back in the old barn. I know it's only for like 12 games right now or something like that, but I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mess for season ticket holders.
Oh, it's awful from a pure business standpoint. You know, the only upside to this is as someone who's nostalgic, or as two, someone who's watching on TV, because the shots were terrible at Barclays. You know, it just, the camera angles were brutal. The stands were distracting, like that truck in the corner always drew my eye, little things like that. So I'm happy to see them back at the Coliseum, but for someone who is going to the games frequently, this is a pain, and this is just another headache that would deter me from going. You know, unless you live near the Coliseum, this is just, why am I going all the way out to Long Island for an Islanders game? You know,
I think you would have to sell. I mean, obviously they're going to sell 41 game season packages, but I think you would have to sell packages for 12 games at the Nassau. and packages for, you know, your 29 games in Brooklyn. I think that you'd have a lot of people balking at the 41 games when they're not all going to be in the same arena.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best idea moving forward, or, you know, doing a six at the Coliseum, you know, 2 6-game packages kind of thing. Just some options for fans, because like travel time isn't easy in New York, especially getting to the island from the mainland. So it's a bit of a hassle, you know, and when you've got a team who has struggled with attendance issues and who until fairly recently hasn't had a great on-ice product, you've got to find a way to get fans there. And I just think you'll have a super tough time selling 41 games a year in 2 different arenas.
Yeah, I think that's going to be their biggest issue, is the distance between the 2 arenas. I mean, I've heard anywhere from 40 to 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, depending on traffic and the route you take. So it's not the easiest place to get around. I mean, New York City traffic is a nightmare. We all know that. I don't think that that's news to anyone. So there's going to be that issue.
Are you looking forward to it, though? The 12 games? Even if they're just, you know, I don't want to say ceremonial, but in a certain sense, just throwback.
I think so. I think that like you said, that very European look with the truck in the corner is
not, just didn't do it for me.
No, it just didn't work as an NHL rink. There are a lot of empty stands in Brooklyn. There's weird camera angles there. So I do like the idea of going back to Nassau. I just don't know, you know, business-wise, if it works, but I think as a fan, I kind of like it.
Yeah, I want them to wear the old fisherman jerseys for every game there at Nassau. just for the fun of it. I love those jerseys. Well, I want a Matt Barzal fisherman jersey. Someone hook me up. Find a place. I know that's a jersey foul.
Okay. We've had our first podcast, we talked about your suit, and I think that liking the Islanders fisherman jerseys explains many things about Colton's blue suits. So
yeah, they're just different, you know. Nothing else in the NHL is like them. I think that's what I like. I love the old purple Kings jerseys, like Marcel Dion.
I can live with those. I like,
you know,
purple Kings jerseys. I don't like black on everything.
Yeah, that's what it is. Black. I love solid color.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's not great for all fans, especially people with you know, color disabilities, but I just love the look of solid color jerseys.
I'm fine with going back to the old school 80s Islanders jerseys from the Dennis Pavan, Brian Trotche era. and that would be fine with me, but I think the Spano era, Milbury era fisherman's jerseys should be something that Islanders fans are just like, we do not want to live this again. I don't think that Islanders fans will support it, because it reminds them of an era of very bad hockey.
That's fair.
And so, you know, if you want to go back to early 80s jerseys, I think that the Islanders fans can get on board with that. But I don't think they would want to go back to those mid-90s monstrosities.
Off topic. You know what I want to see come back? And not because they were good at all. The old diagonal lettering were knocking off the Rangers jerseys. You know, like the Bolts and the Sens. And, oh, God, they were the worst jerseys I've ever seen in my life. And I want to see them come back.
All right. We'll put that through to our suggestion box at the NHL headquarters in New York. Next time I'm down there, I will drop that in the suggestion box.
Someone tells me it's just a big trash bin.
It may be. It might very well be. They may have spelled suggestions with the G at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Shall we move on?
Okay. Yes, yes. So I think some Islanders fans will be tired from hearing about the 90s, and that would make them like Carey Price earlier in the season when he had chronic fatigue syndrome. What do you think about this story? I mean, I have my own thoughts on it, which I'll go through, but I'll give you the first shot at it, Colton.
Carey Price plays a lot of hockey. You know, plain and simple, he just does. He was coming off an injury last season, and so maybe he wasn't in the best shape, or he wasn't perfect for it. Or sorry, two seasons ago he was coming back for it, so maybe he wasn't ready. It's tough for me to buy this. It seems like, as a professional athlete who's played in the NHL for, at that point, I think it was 10 seasons, you know, you should know your diet. You should know your workout regime. Unless the guy caught mono, I have a really tough time believing it was chronic fatigue.
Yeah, I mean, or mono or something similar.
Yeah.
They said that the change in his diet really changed a lot of things. The other thing I look at, it, and I was saying this when I went to Montreal in December, I was really surprised because when I went there, it was the fifth game for Price after he was back from the injury. It was also the fifth game in 8 days for the Canadiens. Mm-hmm. And they played him in all five games. They started him all five games in 8 days immediately after his injury. And we didn't know anything about chronic fatigue accusations at that point. I was just saying, here's a guy coming off some sort of injury, and you're going to play him five games in 8 days? Like, one mm-hmm. of the Detroit games clearly could have been Charlie Lindgren or Antti Niemi at that time as the backup. There was no reason for Price to play all those games in a row. And then after they beat Detroit, he had a bad week the next week. I mean, he won five in a row, and then he lost three in a row. He got pulled in one of them. He gave up, like, I think 11 goals across the three games. And he looked, to me, and I said it at the time, he looked like a guy who was tired in those three games. So if this is really true about chronic fatigue, I think that there's a bigger problem in Montreal in the workload they gave him in returning from it. Certainly was a bit of an issue in that they didn't ease him back into the lineup in any way. They played him in such a way as most NHL goaltenders, even healthy ones, would never play that amount of games in that shorter stretch of time. So to me, I don't know if that lends credence to it's not as big an issue as it's been made to be in terms of the chronic fatigue issue, or if it's bad management on the Canadiens coaching and management staff.
The one thing I'll say is I have heard of this happening before to high-level hockey players. I had a friend who played Division I hockey at RIT, and she had something like this come up in her junior year. And all of a sudden discovered she was, like, severely allergic to gluten. And she missed most of the season because she was chronically fatigued, couldn't play, couldn't get up, frequently sick. Eventually, she totally revamped her diet and was able to play her senior year because she finally had energy again. And so this is definitely something that has happened before, you know, maybe not in the NHL, but there's definitely been cases of it. That said, it's fairly rare. You know, it's not something that's very common. And so maybe this happened to Price, but I think it's much more likely that he was just overplayed and coming back from an injury where he wasn't 100%.
Yeah,
and he played a lot of hockey the year before. Like, he played 62 games that year.
Oh, and then last year he played a lot of hockey because he played the World Cup.
Yeah.
And then he played all those, you know, was the number one guy and didn't give Montoya a heck of a lot of starts as a Hab. Played the playoffs, and he went through a lot of hockey again last season. So he's coming off the summer and things like that. Now, Price has had... It's very early in his career. We're talking like when Halak and Price were first battling for the job. Had some issues where he showed up overweight, where the team basically had him cut 30 pounds in one summer because his diet was, when in his rookie year, apparently consisted of a lot of McDonald's, like a lot of McDonald's when he had no one to cook for him. And that became, and he was up to like 240, 250 pounds, and they wanted him down to like 210. So I remember that. We're talking like 08, 09, mm-hmm. you know, 07, somewhere in that range. So, I mean, Price getting a little bit off of his diet and it affecting him, I don't think he ever went back to what he was doing when he came up as a 20 and 21 year old. But I think it's possible for a guy that maybe his diet got altered a little bit in the summer, and wasn't quite where it should have been, at the start of the season, and they had to make some modifications to it. And as you said, sometimes gluten will start to affect people more. Gluten can be one of the reasons for chronic fatigue, and can be a factor that makes it much worse. And so maybe he was getting more wheat and more gluten than he had been previously. That's certainly a possibility, as well as other things like vitamin D and some other vitamins that he was deficient in that they wanted to get him up with.
Yeah, I mean, even an iron deficiency would cause something similar to this. It just seems so, and perhaps this is my own personal bias coming through, but I mean, like, you look at other sports, you know, baseball, soccer, these are sports where there is, you know, professional dietitians, especially in European soccer. I mean, these guys have all of their meals made for them when they're at the training grounds, professional chefs brought in, meal plans sorted out. I mean, that just seems like a basic tenet of a professional sports club, is having a dietitian, a nutrition, a chef, someone to make sure these guys are eating the right foods, the healthy foods, and then make them palatable. You know, that is just such an easily controlled thing that will automatically make your team better if you weren't doing it before. And so it just boggles my mind that, you know, if it is a diet thing that wasn't a sudden allergy, how do they get away from it? You know, like, how is there not someone saying this is what you can and cannot eat if that's what it was? Or it was mono and this is all for nothing.
maybe. It's very possible. I mean, it's also an article translated from a French journalist to us through Eric Engels. Eric Engels is bilingual and no issue with that, and I'm sure he translated it correctly. But even sometimes things just get lost a little bit in translation, and that mm-hmm. might be not blaming Engels or anyone like that, but it might just be an issue of some translation not being entirely accurate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not impossible for a reporter to phrase something differently than Price meant it, and then a second reporter to phrase something slightly differently than the first reporter, and suddenly we're playing telephone.
Oh, absolutely, because Price is going to say it in English, and then it's going to get reported in French, and then it's going to get translated back to English. It's we have played quite a game of translation here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he's back. He looked solid. I'm not that worried. You know, I think whatever changes they did make, if they were the solution, have clearly worked.
I mean, he's at, what, a 924 since his return?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's let in some bad goals. I mean, the goal against the Bruins on Saturday night was a bad goal. But even when he was an MVP, he let in some bad goals. That's what happens to goal. No goalie makes 100% of the saves, even the savable pucks. Every goalie lets in a bad goal once in a while. So I think that part of it is things getting overblown because of where the Canadians are in the standings. He clearly did look off early in the season. I mean, let's be honest about that. Before they shut him down for those 3 weeks, he didn't look like Carey Price.
No. No, he didn't at all.
And so that's an issue. And that's where the Habs are going to need to go. The way they've played him since that point in time has not indicated a guy who needs extra rest or who is fatigued either. That 9:22, he's playing almost every night. There's been very few starts for Antti Niemi.
Mm-hmm. It's Carey Price, and they're riding him like he is Carey Price again, which seems to tell me they think the issue is solved.
Yeah.
All Vegas?
Right. Yeah, I mean, first, I think we can take a little break and tell people to check out the website, check out
yes.
the Write For Us page at Last Word on Hockey. We've just promoted internally some new managing editors in John Gove. We have promoted a couple of new editors in Christian Holmes, and Daniel Brown's been doing a great job at editing articles and getting them out for publishing, and Christian's getting his feet wet. I think he just came on board yesterday as an editor, so he's getting his feet wet and getting started. I know we're talking about a third editor, a third new editor, a third new editor. And that's being some internal discussions right now. So there is room for advancement. And you can get started as a writer because we are one of the reasons we're putting more editors in place is because we expect more articles coming down the pike. And that means more writers out there. So certainly check out our Write For Us page. If you have opinions about hockey and you can write with a decent amount of grammar. I mean, Nick Hendrickson is not the greatest writer, but we publish him anyway. So I'm just kidding about Nick, who's our a fellow managing editor at the site. But yeah, if you've got some strong opinions and some decent writing and grammar skills, certainly come on board and we will work with you and help you to become a better hockey writer.
It's true. And it's a great place to just vent hockey opinions. It's where I complain about the Senators all the time and where you can do the same should you choose to. So I would highly recommend it. Definitely check it out. Even if you're just, lurking, reading the articles, give it a shot. We are more than welcome, more than open, I should say, to working with you.
Yes. And then one of the benefits of being a writer is our Last Word on Hockey chat, where all our writers are involved in the chat. And I troll Colton about Cody Ceci.
It is a blast. There's a lot of fun happenings in the chat. It is worth it just for that. I know that's a lot of times the writer's favorite place. So I know it's one of mine.
Yes. Even with the Cody Ceci talk.
Even with the Cody Ceci talk, which, to be fair, right there with you. He has been abysmal, but what can you do beyond extend him to a 5x5?
Yeah, which... I mean, someone has to be the number one defenseman after Erik Karlsson is traded.
You know, and it can't be Thomas Chabot because that's just crazy talk. Why not make it Cody Ceci? One of these days, we'll do a full hour just on the Senators' blue line, and it'll be me venting for 45 minutes about how he can't get out of his own zone.
Fair enough. So let's talk about Vegas. We've got the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, they were briefly in first overall. They think they spent one night in first overall, which is all many people really need to spend in Vegas is one night. But they were in first overall before being passed again by the Tampa Bay Lightning with their win over Chicago. Are the Vegas Golden Knights real contenders, and what should they do at the trade deadline?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. They have a fantastic goal differential and an unbelievable home record. Their road record is above 500.
Barely, but yes.
Technically. And their possession numbers have improved as of late. And so I don't think this team is the second best team in the league, but I also don't think they're bad. And that to me is an indictment of every other GM. As for what they should do at the trade deadline, I'd keep on keeping on. Normally, for a team like this, I would suggest selling. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea if you decide to move a guy like a James Neal because you want to invest in your future. That said, it is the first season for this team. They've been pretty good. You're going to make the playoffs. You'll have home ice advantage for a lot of this. I don't know that home ice advantage is going to be as effective as it's been in the regular season, because a lot of these teams will have been to Vegas and experienced that. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but they won't be as susceptible to that Vegas flu, so to speak. That said,
it's also the playoffs. I mean, it's human nature to have the added level of responsibility and be like, this is a playoff game, I'm not going to party the night before, versus this is one of 82 regular season games, I'm going to go blow off some steam.
And that's exactly it. And so to me, you know, the part of me that is thinking strictly with my head says, you know what, you should probably sell, and it's probably best. But there's a part of me that realizes this is the team's first season. This is an amazing opportunity from the fans. From a business point of view, you know you're going to sell out that barn every single playoff game and get tons of media coverage because it's such a fantastic story. So from a pure entertainment / making money perspective, it's probably not the worst thing to just say, you know what, we're making the playoffs, why don't we go for it? I wouldn't mortgage the future to try and win a cup, because I don't think you're cup contenders, but I would definitely just say, hey, let's try it. Let's see what we can do. Let's try and make a little noise.
I don't
just for the fans.
I mean, I like what they did with Marchessault. I can't speak, but
Marchessault, yeah, easy for you to say.
Yeah, and getting him locked up to a contract. I like some of the short term contract extensions they've done on their blue line in recent weeks, and started to show that these guys who are UFAs on July the 1st, we're not going to be trading them away, but we're also not going to be losing them for nothing. And I wouldn't mind a similar type of deal on James Neal. I think James Neal's age and things mean that you have to be careful on term and dollar amount to not end up with a very bad contract on your hand, on your books. But I wouldn't mind like a 4-year extension for James Neal if they're comfortable with that. I think that would make a lot of sense. You don't want him to become Andrew Ladd.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing, is to be a lot of guys, once they get past 30, the drop off is steep. But a 3 or 4 year deal for James Neal, and to keep him and to push for it, I see your point. I mean, I think that it's a very good one, in that you've sold the city on hockey. Playoff hockey is just another level. The level of intensity, the way things hang on every puck battle, on every shot on net. The anxiety I feel watching playoff hockey, never mind to see it, but it raises your pulse, it raises your blood pressure, and it's a different feeling. And I think that you want that to sell a market on the league. Especially a market that's going to be threatened very shortly with the Las Vegas Raiders, and establish yourself. This is your time to establish yourself as a force in the Vegas sports market, when you are the only game in town, when you are going to get this publicity as an NHL expansion team that made the playoffs. I have no problem in holding on to your pieces. And I think that you've got something special going on in Vegas right now. I might shy away from even being a buyer I wouldn't want to disrupt what's going on in that dressing room. I think, number one, you don't want to mortgage your future, like you've said. But number two, I think that there is a real sense of these guys playing with a chip on their shoulder, as being the outcasts of the league, as being the guys that their teams didn't want. And that is part of the fuel here in Vegas. And I don't want to take away from that as being by bringing in the trade deadline acquisition, who's going to put us over the top. But that guy becomes a marquee guy and a wanted man, and I want that dressing room to keep feeling like they're not wanted.
I completely agree. I think it was Riley Smith that came out and talked about that. I may be wrong here, but it was basically him saying, you know, it was after a game that they won. They said, we really wanted to win this for X player. I forget who it was. And he said, and it's really neat because, you know, every game is like that. You know, every game we play, there is a guy who is playing against his old team who we want to win it for. You know, we're doing this for them. We're trying a little extra hard. And I thought that was so neat because it's one of the few times where you really see the psychological aspect behind sport. You know, so often people say, you know, he's not mentally tough, or, you know, they weren't trying hard enough, or, you know, they played off on all these things that you can't prove. But this was a really neat insight into a situation where you really can see what these players are thinking, and maybe not why they're playing so well, but why they're playing the way they are, why their games have been so exciting to watch every night.
Yeah, and that aspect, I think, needs to continue to be part of the team, especially in the playoffs where the puck battles and everything, the intensity just ratchets up. Having that level having that we want to win this series because we want to beat, you know, whoever it is, if they're playing the Ducks in the first round, Shea Theodore's team that gave up on him, or we want to beat, you know, if they're playing the Flames in the first round, was it Derek Englund that they got from the Flames?
Yeah.
You know, we want to do it for Englund. Whoever it may be, that they play in the first round, they're going to have a reason to want to beat that team.
Mm-hmm. No, you're completely right.
And I think keeping that together and keeping that sense, and they can all know it. It resonates with each and every one of them because they all know it could be their old team that they're facing off against. While they're doing it for Englund or for Shea Theodore, they all know it just as easily could have been their team that they're facing in the first round.
And that's just it. And I think that's what makes this team so unique, so special. And I completely agree with you. I wouldn't disrupt it by buying, especially because it's going to involve you mortgaging your future on a team that, you know, should be looking at the future.
They had a lot of draft picks last year, but they don't have the farm system to sell at this point. They've got a very good collection from the 2017 draft, but they don't have the stratified farm system with these prospects are ready this year, these prospects are going to be ready next year, these guys are 3 years away. Like, they don't have those NHL ready prospects 2 years away, 1 year away, you know, still in juniors kind of guys in their system right now, not to the same extent. I mean, some of those 2017 draft picks like a Cody Glass or a Nick Suzuki may be ready faster than others, but there's just no stratifying to their prospect pool right now.
Oh, I completely agree. You want to move on? Pittsburgh?
Sure. Pittsburgh and Chicago, two teams. You know, we never expected Vegas to make the playoffs. Could Pittsburgh or Chicago miss the playoffs or both?
I don't think Pittsburgh misses, for what it's worth. They have had terrible percentages, and they are still 2 points out of a playoff spot. I don't think they miss. Chicago, on the other hand, that's an interesting one. Central Division is very, very good. You know, you look at where they're at right now. They are 7 points out of a wild card spot, not even out of the playoffs, out of a wild card spot, and two of the top five teams in the league own playoff spots in the Central right now. And St. Louis looks like they're about to pick up another win against Ottawa. That'll bump them. You know, they're already in that top 10 conversation, but that's going to bump them up, I think, to tied eighth. It's, you know, this is a really tough division. And despite Chicago playing decently over the last month and a half, I don't see it happening. You know, Dallas is phenomenal. Winnipeg and Nashville have been outstanding. St. Louis has gone on a tear recently. Colorado, went on a 10-game win streak, which I think is like there's a 4% chance of happening, something silly like that. It's things just haven't lined up for the Blackhawks this year, and we knew that was going to happen. We knew it was going to be a little trickier for the team as they aged and they figured out how they change. But this isn't what I expected from them. Pittsburgh, I'm not as worried about, you know? Well, percentages are finicky.
The biggest thing to me in Chicago is they had a goalie who was playing at a Vezina capable, you know, a legit Vezina contender at the end of November. Went down, I believe it was it lower body injury or was it a concussion in December?
I think it was a lower body injury.
Okay, went down with a lower body injury. Now he's got vertigo and is having his second stint on IR. We're not sure when he's going to come back or if he even comes back this season. And Anton Forsberg is just not getting the job done as a backup. Jeff Glass is a great story. But let's face it, he's a 32-year-old whose biggest claim to fame in hockey will always be being the goaltender for the greatest world junior hockey team ever assembled.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be Jeff Glass's legacy, and he's not the savior, and he's not going to save this team, and he's probably a backup caliber NHL goaltender. It's nice to see him win some games and get his first starts and things like that after he never got a chance from 2005 till now, got passed on the depth chart in Chicago by guys like Antti Niemi and Corey Crawford and that over the years, and went to the KHL and then came back. I think he was in the LA organization as well and got passed by Jonathan Quick. If
you're right about that.
If that's right. So he found himself in some bad positions in terms of getting himself ice time, ended up in the KHL, and then now has come back and is seeing his NHL dream come true at 32, but I don't think he's the guy to get you into the playoffs. And I think that the Blackhawks are in trouble, and I think Brent Seabrook is exhibit A of that aging process that's going on in Chicago. I'm going to be called blasphemous by some listeners for saying this, but Jonathan Toews is not as good as he's very overrated to me.
I think it depends what you're talking about. Jonathan Toews is good. He's not going to carry this team single-handedly to the playoffs.
He's a 60-point center getting $10.5 million a season for intangibles and leader beans.
All right, well, we can agree that his contract is probably a little bit much. He's got a strong two-way game. He is a 60-point center, which are all valuable. He's probably being paid $2.5 million too much.
Yes, and that's where I say Jonathan Toews is a good player. I would even say he's a very good player. But a few years ago, there was talk of him being the best all-around player in the game. Before Sidney Crosby won his two Stanley Cups, there was talk about him being better than Crosby. That's where I say he's overrated.
No, I mean, he's...
That talk has been out there, and that talk has been part of the narrative and part of the conversation around Jonathan Toews when the Blackhawks won three Stanley Cups. And that's not who he is. He's a very good player. Don't get me wrong on that. But when we start talking about the top five players in the NHL, the top 10 players in the NHL, top player on his team, he's not even.
Agreed.
I will take Patrick Kane as the top player on that team. They've always been mentioned in the same breath, but to me, Kane is head and shoulders above as far as value goes.
When I look at Jonathan Toews, and maybe this isn't the most fair comparison, but is Jonathan Toews that different from Ryan Getzlaf? I know they play a different style of game, but both are solid defensively. Both score 60 to 70 points. I don't think Jonathan Toews is that far off from Getzlaf, in my opinion.
No.
And like that should tell you enough in itself about when someone says he's overrated. Like, yeah, he's a very good player, but you're never throwing out Getzlaf's name And is he better than Crosby? Or is he better than Bergeron? Or pick a player, you know? It's just a very strong player.
Yeah, and I mean, I would take Anze Kopitar over Jonathan Toews.
Ah, that's a tough one. That's fair.
I would take Patrice Bergeron over both of them.
That's not as tough. I'm with you on that.
When we talk about players in that two-way center category, those are the kind of guys I'm looking at comparing him with. And those are guys who are very good, but they don't get compared to the Crosbys and the McDavids of the NHL.
And that's just it. You know, I think Patrice Bergeron is the best center you can get if it's not a generational talent. You know, if you take out the absolute best of the best, I think Patrice Bergeron is my number one pick. But it tells you that you're having to take out the best of the best.
Yeah, we're not talking about Steven Stamkos and Sidney Crosby and Jonathan Tavares and a team to transition into another team we wanted to talk about tonight. Nathan MacKinnon is having an unbelievable season. Hart Trophy consideration for me, with what he's done in Colorado, how the Avalanche have their 10-game winning streak, and how quickly they've turned this franchise around to being one of the worst teams since the lockout, into legitimately fighting for a playoff spot. Since the day of the trade that we won't mention who they traded with, but the big trade the Avalanche made, Nathan MacKinnon has the most points in the NHL, and he's leading all other players by 7.
He has been phenomenal. I am so happy for him as an individual because he has carried that team for so long, and it is just nice to see him actually doing well. But, I don't know what to think about the Avalanche. As a team, I'm not sold on the win streak.
I'm not sold that they're as good as their record looks. I was also not sold that they were as bad as their record last year. I'm not sold that I think they're not a playoff team. I don't see them making the playoffs in this tough division. I think they're going to fall out. But I don't think that they're like a last place team like they were last year and should have been that far down the standings. And they've got some nice pieces for the future. MacKinnon's still very young. You still got
Rantanen,
Tyson Jost, Cale Makar coming up. The trade that brings you extra first, seconds, and thirds. A Girard on the blue line is looking very good as one of the centerpieces of that deal. And a couple good center prospects, you know, maybe not first line caliber, but you've already got MacKinnon and Jost in your system, but some guys who can be part of that. Zadorov has really stepped up his game and become what they wanted when they traded him as the centerpiece in the Ryan O'Reilly deal. So they've got some good pieces on that Avalanche team. I'm just not sure they're ready yet.
I agree with that. I also look at a guy like Alexander Kerfoot, who has been phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. He has been absolutely outstanding. I'm a little concerned about if that can continue. He's shooting almost 27% right now. So,
that's a crazy number.
Will that last? Maybe, maybe not. It's great for now. And, you know, it'll definitely help him out when his contract is up and next season, at the end of next season. But, you know, I mean, this is, for right now, this is a solid team that's fun to watch. It's a low-scoring team, which is strange. You know, Nathan MacKinnon has been fantastic, as has Rantanen and Landeskog. But after that, you know, Kerfoot's been good, but they don't have a lot of depth scoring after those three. Which is, it's pretty balanced, which is nice, and that's normally a good sign, but it also doesn't have a lot of room for immediate improvement. You know, I don't know that they're going to see all of these guys perform or improve on this next season without, you know, having the Gerards of the team, the Josts of the team, step up and lead that. So I think this is a fun run for Avs fans now. I think they're still going to be a middle of the pack team next season, though, and I think they'll finish middle of the pack this season as well.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking about this 10-game winning streak. Jonathan Bernier has started 9 of these 10 games, and over those 9 games has a .955 save percentage.
Well, that's like Jonathan Bernier's average, so that'll last.
Okay. I just, you know, is that sustainable for Jonathan Bernier?
No. No. And do you really think one of Minnesota, Los Angeles, or Anaheim are not going to pass them as they stumble through the gate? You know, the Wild are right there. Yeah. They're right there. And I have a little more faith in them.
Yeah, the Wild seem to be a better constructed club overall. Had some very serious injury issues early in the year. So that's kind of where I am on the Avalanche as well.
Yeah, well, what do you know? You and I come into agreement. Dreams do come true.
I think we normally agree on a lot of things.
Yeah, for the most part. I think... And we have pretty similar takes. I can start changing that if you want, though. Like, I can be like, all aboard the Arizona train. You just wait. They're going to get 20 wins this season. I'm telling you.
I'm fine with Arizona winning, going on a long winning streak.
Me too.
I'm good with that.
Who do you think finishes last? I think it's got to be Arizona, right? Like, they've just been abysmal. They've played decently lately, but, well, I say decently lately, as in they've won a couple games. But they've been abysmal.
Okay, Arizona has been abysmal. I cannot argue with the fact that Arizona have been abysmal. The only thing I can say is the Buffalo Sabres might be just as abysmal. That Buffalo team,
yeah,
is a train wreck. Okay.
Yeah, but you're forgetting OEL is going to get dealt at the deadline. He's not. I'm not. Don't take that seriously.
He may. I could see it. I could see him getting dealt. I mean, if the right offer, there's no pressure to deal him.
But the right offer, I could see Yarmolson getting dealt.
Yeah, I can see that as well.
But I mean, Kane, on the other hand, for the Sabres, it's a battle. It's going to be one of them.
Evander Kane is their best scorer, and he's going, well, goal scorer anyway, and he's going to be out. There's I don't know what to make of Jack Eichel.
I like Jack Eichel a lot. I don't want to say, is he the next Jonathan Taves? But I think, you know, when we talk about centers, I think he will fall into that category of the 2A. You know?
The second tier, yes. I don't see the defensive game in Jack
Eichel. Sorry, I should clarify on that. And you're right. I don't think he has that. To the same degree that, you know, the Kopitars, Bergeron's, Getzlaff's, Taves that we mentioned.
I mean, I think my biggest question on him right now is not his offensive game. It's how much of a defensive liability he is still. And he's young, and I get that.
And you look at, like, the guys he's around, too. Yeah. You know, like, the Ristolainen isn't going to save your blue line. Evander Kane isn't a two-way player. You know, it's Alex Nylander isn't. Okay. And that's coming through, you know, like, I see why you're hesitant. I'm not sure if it's him as much as it is just, like, that entire team cannot play defense.
Okay, so going off that, imagine you're the Buffalo Sabres and you have the second overall pick after the lottery.
Ooh.
Can you take Andrei Svechnikov?
No. No, no.
He's going to be the best player available at the number 2 overall spot.
Is he?
I think he would be considered the best player available at that spot.
I'm blanking on his name. Second Swedish defenseman. Starts with B.O.
Bockfist.
Thank you. Because I've seen Bockfist placed second in a number of mock drafts and you know, mid-season ratings so far.
Yeah, I have seen it, but I just feel Svechnikov is the... Can you go with Bockfist ahead of Svechnikov? Let's say you pick 4th.
Ooh.
You pick 4th and Svechnikov's off the board. and Bockfist goes off the board. They go 2 and 3 in whatever order. I mean, that's not
sure.
Let's not argue about that. You're picking fourth. Can you take one of the defensemen ahead of Zadina, Brady Tkachuk? Can you take one of the defensemen at four?
No. The only option for Buffalo is if you don't get first pick, you miss out on Dahlin, then it's a choice. Do I take Bockfist or do I take Svechnikov? If Bockfist is off the board, you have to take a forward. You just have to. They're just better. And you know, I'm pretty solidly always on best player available. In this case, when the two players seem to be so close together and they're different positions, you know, and Svechnikov isn't a center, so I can see it, but I'd probably go the defenseman. I'd go the defenseman just because you need it now, and if you don't, who are you going to rely on?
That's the problem. You've got a team that has Jack Eichel.
That's just it.
Sam Reinhardt as a second overall pick. Alex Nylander. That has Casey Mittelstadt.
You're gonna miss out on your dream years if you don't grab one.
Yeah. Who's your defenseman? Ristolainen and Brendan Gulli?
And Jake McCabe?
I don't mind Brendan Gulli and Jake McCabe on a second pair.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a number one defenseman in those three. I don't see a top pair defenseman in those three. I don't like Ristolainen as a number one or a number two.
Oh, you're gonna piss off Sabres fans.
Tweet the show, Sabres fans. Tweet the show. Let's throw down. And we can talk on Twitter, and if one of you has some good takes on Twitter, I will bring you on the show next week to talk on Skype.
Oh, I love it. Open invitation.
Yeah, if you guys really think that Rasmus Ristolainen is a top pair defenseman on a contending team, because we got to talk about that. If the offense is there, can he run a power play? Yeah, I'll give you that. Can he play top pair minutes against the NHL's best players at even strength and come out with a positive rating in terms of possession numbers, expected goals, whatever you want to look at? I don't think he can. I don't think he's capable of doing that against top lines in the NHL.
I say we end it on that bombshell.
All right.
Not that it's that much of a hot take, but, you know.
No, Sabres fans might disagree.
That's all right. I'm ready for him.
I think the rest may not disagree or will agree.
No, I'm with you on this one.
All right. So that was a good show, I think. We will put it up shortly, so you're probably going to be listening to this on Wednesday morning. We hope you like the show. Check out what's going on at Last Word. We've got a very good article on the Vegas Golden Knights and what they are doing by Christian Holmes. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil it here. There was a line in the article that when I was editing it, I literally spit my drink across the room. So you're going to want to check that out. There's a line in there that if you're a wrestling fan, certainly will make you laugh. I guarantee you that. So we will we'll promote that article. We've got my plan and blueprint for the Habs, which I talked about a lot on last week's show before I wrote the article. It's kind of an inspiration, was a rant I went off on the top of my head last week. So that article is out there. We've got some Leafs coverage looking at why they've had such struggles recently winning in regulation. Also talking about Austin Matthews and why he deserves more power play time. A look at Tuukka Rask silencing doubters in Boston.
Fantastic article, that one.
Yeah. Anything else, Colton, that's really caught your eye in the last couple of days?
I mean, for obvious reasons, Pierre Dorion comments caught my eye, as did the difficult week in Montreal, because I was sad to see them finally win. So, you know.
They might get a second one tonight as we're talking. I don't know. We'll see how that works out tomorrow. But we could see a 10-game winning streak come to an end.
It's true. It's true. I don't want to say it and spoil it. But right now, things are looking good.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good night and enjoy your evening out in Regina.
I'll do my best.
All right. And
have a good one.
I'll try to do the same in Brantford.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.